Oh, no, I'm not at that level. These kids start at 5 or 6, and they do it almost to the exclusion of, it's not a normal life if a person wants to. First of all, I don't have that kind of talent. I wouldn't pretend to have it. And they too miss something. They don't have normal childhoods. They get up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and they go to the rink before anybody else is there. And they may go very late at night and practice. And they have coaches, and some live with it. It's somewhat like what my sister did, to excel in creative things of that sort. You can't do it as a dilettante.
Are you still skating?
Yes. Yes.
3 or 4 times a week?
No, I hurt my knee, and that stopped it for a while. But I plan to go back. Not 4 times, 3 at the most, usually. But in fact, I have always been enrolled in one of the classes at Mount Lebanon. They have ice dance, and I think for 2 or 3 years I've been going there to ice dance classes. I like the people who are involved in it, and it's a wonderful feeling to glide over the ice. And it's strange. You see people doing turns and spins and things, and you think, I'll never be able to do that. And then one day you're able to do one of those things, and then you go on. It's a progression, and then you reach your limit. And you don't make much more progress after that, generally. But
what a beautiful sport, though.
Pardon?
What a beautiful sport it is.
It is, it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to get your wife on the ice?
No. No.
Mr. Kohlweiser, we have already touched on the differences in Pittsburgh yesterday and today,
mm-hmm.
but would you like to add any other comments in terms of Pittsburgh yesterday or today, socially, politically, environmentally, culturally? Do you have anything to add do you have anything you'd like to add about that?
Well, I think we're all aware of the changes. When I first started coming here, it was a mill town, and it is true that in certain weather conditions you could hardly see across the street. Now that's no longer a problem, and it's changing markedly to a technical kind of a city, I believe. Services are replacing heavy industry. And while we had a very great loss of jobs during the 60s and 70s, well, no, I think it started really in the 70s. Now people are starting to, we read in the paper about companies that run trucks are moving, and they claim that there are more, slightly more, not greatly more, but slightly more people moving in than are leaving today. And those people are employed in technical capacities. Certainly the University of Pittsburgh and its health center and all the other health centers are one of the biggest contributors to the growth of the city, particularly this end of the city where a lot of them like to settle. And I think that in the end it may even be better that this change has come about. But I think the history of Pittsburgh and the buildings and everything and the facilities and opportunities here make it a wonderful place to live. Every time I drive through Schenley Park past the golf club there and look at the city in the distance, it's a thrill. Or when you go down to Oakland and you drive around the library and the museum and the Phipps Conservatory. It's really a beautiful site. I'm very much taken with Pittsburgh.
I think a lot of us are today. We weren't before. Architecturally, I don't know much about it, but is it, does it stand up? I know the Prince of England was here. Architecturally, does it stand up?
The Pennsylvania?
The Prince of, I don't know who he is, Wales.
Yes, yes, Charles.
Right.
Yeah. I can't say that the recent work is that outstanding. I'm trying to think of what... And I'm not sure that it is in any city. I think architecture is going through a change. It certainly is. You have the modern movement, rather stark, unadorned buildings, rather harsh. And now we're in what's called the postmodern period, when classical details are applied to newer buildings, and they are softer, they're more, I think, more related to human use than the so-called modern were. But I don't know of any really outstanding modern buildings in the city. PPG building is a tour de force, but it really doesn't relate, or it's not too happy in its setting. It's very hot. In fact, at the ground level, the plaza and the rest of it are rather forbidding, I think. I'm trying to think of some other buildings. I think the U.S. Steel Building has a very stately look. I like the color of it, and of course it's an engineering accomplishment in the way they fireproofed it with water circulating around all this, through all the steel and the Corten steel, and I think it's has a majesty about it and a discipline about it. I like that, and I think despite what they say about Oxford Center being just another, it's not really a skyscraper, but another office complex, that its mall and its public spaces are much more successful than PPG, which it's strange, you have to get a pass at the desk to even go into the building, you know, to go out upstairs or through it. And the food court is a complete failure. It's just not thought of in terms of human use, whereas I think Oxford is much more successful in that. And then, of course, we have buildings like the Federal Building and some of the others that are rather poor example of bureaucratic kind of architecture. I think architecture too will improve and enhance the city much more in the future than it has.
Do you have a favorite?
Not really. No.
Mr. Kornwasser, how do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community today?
You know, I haven't thought too much about that. I really don't know statistically whether temples and synagogues are, memberships are increasing or decreasing, but I think one problem is intermarriage, which I understand now half of the marriages are between Jews and non-Jews, and that certainly isn't going to make for a strong Jewish presence in years to come. I think that the Jews are much more outspoken and much more willing to take a stand on national issues and make themselves heard than they ever were. And during my childhood, my father didn't try to conceal the fact that he was Jewish, but he would never get involved in anything that would identify him as being particularly Jewish. I don't think he would have. I know he would never have joined a Jewish organization like B'nai B'rith or even a religious organization. But I can't really say. I can't predict. But I'm sure the sense of Jewishness will eventually decrease as more people intermarry, and then their offspring perhaps won't even feel that they themselves are Jewish. Of course, this neighborhood we live in, Squirrel Hill, is really very cosmopolitan. We have many Asians, and I think people would be surprised if they realized how many Asians and even blacks that live in this community. I think that's good. I think diversity is good. On the other hand, there are a lot of Orthodox moving in, but the criticism of them, especially by non-Jews, is that they are very, I don't know what the word is, they keep to themselves, and the impression is that they feel rather superior to other people. And I know that they don't really, I don't think they're terribly interested in civic problems or mixing with people of other beliefs. And I don't know statistically what percentage of the Jews in this area are Orthodox, but they seem to be apart from other people. That's just not my observation. Gentile friends have commented on that too.
Mr. Kornwasser, you had said that Jimmy was in the first bar mitzvah class
at Rosh Hashanah.
Could
yeah.
you tell us about that class?
Well,
that's history.
Yes. For years, the German Jews controlled Rosh Hashanah. In fact, I think it was one of the first congregations of its sort in the country. And of course, the basis for creating Rosh Hashanah was to, I think it started in Germany, didn't it? What is that called? I can't think of the, there's Orthodox, there's, would it be called Reform? One of the things they wanted was to simplify services, to eliminate bar mitzvahs and much of the other I'm at a loss for words, but they wanted to make it more modern. I think they modernize it, and they were largely German Jews who controlled it. And then when Rabbi Jacob became the head rabbi there.
Which was what year?
Pardon?
Which year was that?
What year? It must be 20 years of 14. Oh, it's over 20. It may be 25, something like that. He succeeded. I can't think of his name now, right? Freehoff. He succeeded Freehoff. And it's odd because he himself, I think his family were, they were German Jews. And in fact, his father was a rabbi in Germany. But the congregation had changed. The majority were no longer German Jews. And the people who controlled the purse strings, shall we say, were also no longer German Jews. And there was a cry for a more conservative type of service. And they finally convinced the congregation to have bar mitzvahs, which I think they still do. So Jimmy was in the first bar mitzvah class, and he enjoyed it so much. I think Rabbi Jacob is partially responsible for that. He's a wonderful person. And Jimmy expressed an interest in being a rabbi. It really moved him, the reading, the learning of Hebrew, and the history and the preparation that he had to go through. Somewhere along the line, he, as he's done with several other pursuits, he dismissed that. Of course, he went to school at St. Edmund's, which had perhaps a quarter of the students were Jewish there. Then he went on, they told him that, oh, he couldn't go on to a public high school. He'd have to go to Shadyside, so he did. And perhaps a quarter of them were Jewish, too. And I don't know if that had some bearing on his decision. But it's interesting. He, I think his first year at St. Edmund's, they had an art project. And he did a construction out of black and white paper. He was quite artistic, of Moses. And the headmaster there hung it in his office. And I believe his family still have it. So that he, and I remember when the honor students there had the, they had Episcopal services there. And I think the honor student of the week or whatever period would have the honor of leading the school body in prayer, I believe it was. And he felt very awkward about doing that, and that's how strongly he felt. And he, although I don't think it was really an Episcopal prayer, but he begged off, and I think they respected him for that. And as I say, I don't know just when his mind was changed about becoming a rabbi. We didn't discourage it or encourage it, for that matter.
Just moving back just a little bit, how large was the class at Rode of Shalom, the first bar mitzvah class?
I think it might have been 15 or 16, something like that.
And how long did Jimmy and his classmates study for bar mitzvah?
How long did they study? I think it was, I don't think it was like it is with conservative and orthodox, where they prepare from the time they're young children. I think they only had perhaps 2 years to prepare. But he became rather proficient in Hebrew and very interested in the Bible and the scriptures. Really, some of them were rather superficial, I'm sure. I'm sure most of them did it because their parents told them to. Perhaps he did at the beginning, but he really got into it. He enjoyed it.
Does he still have an interest?
I don't think so, no.
How did the congregation itself, you said there was a way that they wanted to change it to become more traditional.
Yes.
Was there a small minority, or was there a large minority of people who were against the congregation becoming traditional?
I think due to the change in the backgrounds of the members, from German to probably Eastern European, that they wanted the more traditional service, yes. And I know that the Germans, the wealthy Germans, had died out. And I heard it said that the families like the Kaufmann, the very wealthy who really supported this congregation the most, like the Kaufmanns and the department store people who were largely Germans, and the early industrialists in Pittsburgh, became less interested in the temple. Many of them moved to New York City, and they didn't support it, and they didn't have large families, if any families, to carry it on, so that the newcomers took control of it, you might say.
Mr. Kohlwasser, do you yourself belong to any organizations that you'd like to mention?
I belong to the Rotary Club of Squirrel Hill, and I did belong to B'nai B'rith some time ago. I really enjoy the Rotary Club. We meet every week at an ungodly hour, 7 in the morning, and it too is very educational. We have a speaker. It would appear that it would be difficult to get someone to speak at 7, but almost every week we have a good speaker, and the members, we raise funds, and we do charitable acts. We feed the homeless in the it's called the East End Cooperative Ministry, and a group of us go. We take turns, and we provide the meal and serve it every month, one meal, and then another club in East Liberty does the same. And we sponsor projects at Alderdice, and of course Rotary International has this Polio Plus drive, which whose purpose is to eradicate polio throughout the world, and we contribute to that. We contribute to scholarships abroad, things like that, and I enjoy it.
Would you care to comment on the type of speakers the Rotary has, 7 o'clock in the morning?
Well, and this is, I think, a nice thing. Each, we only have about 20 members, and each member takes a turn of being responsible to furnish a speaker. And, for instance, I myself have had the director of the Pittsburgh Zoo. I got a professor of Eastern Affairs at Pitt to speak, and he was very happy to come. We've had the a lot of charitable, the heads of a lot of charitable groups speak. We've had politicians speak, although they're not permitted to campaign at our meetings, but they've told us particularly about Allegheny County and the problems of government. We've had people speak on the new airport from PennDOT. Let me think of what else. Mothers Against Drunken Drivers. a lot of people from in the social work field for abused women. What is that called? Big Brother. So in a year's time, aside from our business meetings, we probably have as many as 30 or 40 speakers. We also have, we assist at various races, foot races, you know, that are fundraisers for I'm trying to think of a home on Dalzell Place for retarded adults. And well, we just get involved with those kind of things as much as we. Oh, we support high school students from Alderdice going to the World Affairs Council. And oh, I could go on and on.
Is it mostly Square Hill merchants that belong to?
No, in fact, I don't think we have a merchant. We have, we usually have a few people from the banks. We have mostly self-employed people. I think we have two attorneys. We have two men that. Some of our people, one man who is blind works for the Pittsburgh Association for the Blind. We have two people, one works for the Rehabilitation Institute. We have two men that have their own professions or businesses, and yet they're going to law school at night. And we have, I think, one or two attorneys. Quite a variety of backgrounds. One person's in the real estate business. And then we have visitors from other clubs come to our meetings.
Yeah. Mr. Kohlweiser, would you like to add any information that we haven't covered it yet?
I think we covered it pretty well.
Okay.
I don't want it to sound like sour grapes that I never got large jobs. You know, that doesn't preoccupy me, but it is one thing I wonder about if I had perhaps been a little more aggressive in promotional things. Although we did several apartment buildings that ran as high as $4 million. It was not the usual, as it is with some architects, to do that size project. Yeah.
Would you like to mention any honorariums or awards or publications that you may have participated
no,
in?
No, I haven't done much of that. Duquesne Light has given us awards for lighting in stores, but that's not a big thing.
But
we've had, I think once I did the police station in Oakland, I converted it into a movie theater and a storeroom years ago, became the Forum Theater. And I think the Chamber of Commerce voted it the remodeling or the project of the year as far as improvement of Oakland. Things like that we've got.
Well, it's not little. I think that's quite an accomplishment. Mr. Kohlweiser, I just have really appreciated your time, and I certainly have enjoyed it.
Well, I've enjoyed
you,
it, too. In fact,
well.
I often thought I'd like to interview you. Both of you, because I think you've had very interesting lives. In fact, I question why you want mine, which is rather ordinary, I think. Done in this way.
Not at all. It's not ordinary at all. Again, we thank you, and
well, thank you for the honor of being able to do this. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. right. I remember it was a couple of times.
Did you go there?
Yes.
Not to see that, what was that movie that played there for you?
I forget.
Did you see that?
No, I never did.
I don't remember.
I saw it on television, finally.
But I passed by very frequently, not as often when I was in school, certainly, but I always was impressed with the acid. Well, it's in a little castle in Oakland.
It's nice, the building.
Yes, yes.
Oakland's
yes.
deteriorated, yes. hasn't it? There isn't a decent store there anymore.
No. Prices went out of business.
I guess they just can't...
It's different population now, you see.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what it is.
We had a client that owns a lot of Oakland, owns a lot of real estate, including the police station. And his son was trying to put up a mall with all kinds of little shops, and perhaps he was right. He of course the father wouldn't go for anything.
Because changes did.
He wouldn't gamble on. He if somebody came to him and said, "I'll rent it if you do it."
Mm.
But he wouldn't build something and then try to find...
They changed what used to be Frankie Gastine, do you remember? Frankie Gastine's, they changed it to Frankie
Gastine.
Yes,
it's now Hemingway's.
Yeah, it looks very different. Oh, I mean, when I was in my undergraduate life forever, I used to go there so often. And
it's nice now. We go there for dinner sometime.
Yeah. I don't know, I like the old-fashioned things.
At one time...
We were somehow.
Oakland... Well, anyway.